A 5-year-old girl stands between her mother and a man's raised fist. "You're not hitting mommy," she cries. In that moment of instinctive courage, Hannah Shaw sealed her fate. Her father, the community's respected imam, the man who taught others about mercy and compassion, would redirect his violence toward her for the next 11 years. This is the devastating paradox at the heart of the imam's daughter. How does a child survive when the person meant to protect her becomes her greatest threat? How do you escape when your prison is also your home and your jailer is revered as holy? Hannah's story forces us to confront uncomfortable truths about the intersection of faith, culture, and power, and the extraordinary resilience required to break free from all three.
From the outside, Hannah's childhood in Burnford, England looked like a successful immigrant story. Her father had risen from factory worker to community imam, their Victorian terrace on East Street welcoming neighbors with the scent of curry and cardamom. Her mother worked her Singer sewing machine, creating traditional shawar kameez for local families. They lived modestly on benefits and donations, their home filled with prayer mats and Quran verses Hannah memorized at age 3 without understanding. But preservation came at a cost. Like many immigrant families, Hannah's parents gripped traditions tighter when surrounded by foreign influences, recreating their Pakistani village with stricter adherence. Her father's hatred of Gore, white people, meant Hannah couldn't bring white friends home, though she secretly befriended Jane and Susan, two sisters who represented an impossible world of freedom. Through them, Hannah glimpsed girls who wore short sleeves, attended birthday parties, and spoke to boys without fear. Daily prayers punctuated existence like clockwork. Her barely educated mother managed 6 children while remaining subservient to her husband's violent whims. The gap between Hannah's restricted life and her schoolmates' freedom widened with each passing year.
After Hannah intervened in that beating at age 5, she became the sole focus of her father's aggression. Physical punishment escalated to monthly occurrences, accompanied by constant verbal degradation, being told she was stupid, lazy, and useless. Her mother never intervened, seemingly relieved that the violence had redirected. To cope with her circumstances, Hannah created an imaginary world of loneliness birds, giant white doves who transported her to peaceful lavender fields where she could find safety and solace. 6 months later, her father's abuse took a more severe turn. He entered her bedroom, calling her evil and declaring she would burn in hell. What followed was sexual abuse, a pattern that would continue and intensify over time. He began confining her to the cellar beneath their kitchen, a dark, damp brick space infested with vermin. Hannah would be locked there for extended periods, sometimes hours, sometimes days, without adequate food, water, or clothing. Her mother occasionally brought food when her father was away at the mosque, but never acknowledged the abuse or took protective action. On one occasion, when caught helping, she herself was severely beaten. No one questioned Hannah's frequent absences from school. The physical evidence of abuse was either ignored by extended family or concealed beneath traditional clothing. When her friend Jane noticed injuries during physical education class, Hannah explained them as accidents from falling downstairs. In their cultural context, speaking out against her father, who served as the community's imam, would bring profound shame that was considered unacceptable. Despite the horror, Hannah found ways to rebel. When Jane and Susan invited her over one summer afternoon, she discovered a world that reminded her of lavender fields, a beautiful home with a flower garden, girls with their own bedrooms, and affectionate parents. This glimpse of normalcy became her template for a different life. Her rebellions grew more deliberate. She secretly cut herself a fringe, hiding it under her hijab until her mother discovered it and slapped her, cursing that she'd hang by her hair in hell. Television became another window to freedom, especially soap operas, that gave her common ground with English friends. Hannah kept pop music cassettes and stickers of Bros, New Kids on the Block, and Luke Perry from Beverly Hills 90210 concealed in her school pencil case, her entire private life defended against her tattling sister Sabina.
At school, learning offered escape. She won the Burmford Comp Prize for English and used her 9 prize money to buy a compact Oxford English Dictionary and The Outsiders, a novel about being trapped in a life and culture she neither liked nor related to. For non-uniform days, Hannah secretly wore her friend Sonia's Western clothes, jeans, and makeup for the first time. This delicious rebellion became their regular ritual, giving Hannah a precious taste of control. At 15, while preparing for her GCSEs, Hannah discovered her father's plans to arrange her marriage to a relative in Pakistan, a calculated measure to silence her permanently. She contacted Skip, a former neighbor who had escaped a similar situation. Her teacher arranged a meeting with the principal, Mrs. Jones, and Barry, her assigned social worker, who implemented safeguarding procedures and arranged emergency accommodation with Mrs. Jones. That first evening revealed a different model of family life: inclusive dining, proper sleeping arrangements, and genuine security. When her father arrived at college with a religious leader as interpreter, his public display focused solely on reputation rather than her well-being. When he expressed distress about community judgment, Hannah responded decisively in Punjabi. She would not return. Shortly after, Hannah asked to accompany the Jones family to church. The Methodist service shocked her. The priest opened with a self-deprecating joke, something inconceivable for an imam. He spoke about Jesus with genuine excitement and played guitar during hymns. People put Bibles on the floor and prayed in understandable English. Christians prayed for people of all faiths, contrasting sharply with Islamic charity directed exclusively to other Muslims. At midnight mass, when the sermon spoke about God becoming man to show his love, something shifted inside her. That night, Hannah prayed, "God, if you are real, if you exist and you are a loving God, then I want to know you and I want you to come into my heart." Hannah's conversion brought devastating consequences. Her brother declared, "You'll always be Muslim. It's in your blood." When she naively sent baptism invocations to her family, approximately 40 Pakistani men, led by her father and uncle, surrounded her house armed with hammers, sticks, and knives. Her father's voice thundered through the letterbox, "Filthy traitor, we're going to cut you up." Hannah hid under her bed as men tried breaking down her door. After 40 minutes, the mob dispersed. She fled to Rachel's house with a handful of possessions. The next year became desperate survival. Every 3 months, Skip received intelligence that her family had traced her location, forcing immediate relocation. Her father had transformed Friday prayers into a manhunt, distributing her photos and offering rewards. Hannah lived in constant flight readiness, her life contained in a single bag. She changed her name from Hanan to Hannah. 2 years later, she found enough stability to apply to Lancaster University's Theology and Religious Studies program, a chance to process her journey while understanding different belief systems. In Farnham, a southern English town with few Pakistani Muslims, Hannah found anonymity and safety. She befriended Samantha, an artistic extrovert, and moved into a Victorian terraced house with Samantha and her brother Chris. As security replaced survival mode, her emotional defenses crumbled. Nightmares, flashbacks, and blackouts followed. Sometimes she'd wake in unfamiliar places with no memory of arriving. After therapy and a PTSD diagnosis, Hannah found solace at Harn Hill, a faith-based Cotswolds retreat where confronting her past openly helped her release the pain and eventually forgive her father, not for his sake, but for her own healing. On Christmas Eve 2006, during midnight mass, Hannah noticed Tom, artistic-looking, with gorgeous blue eyes and a trimmed goatee. Despite her wariness of men, his gentle persistence won her over. During long walks, she shared her past, fearing he'd leave, but knowing silence would build their relationship on lies. Tom proved caring and supportive through her continuing therapy. Exactly 1 year later, he proposed at midnight mass in the same church. They married in spring 2008 at St. Bride's Church in a lavender-themed wedding featuring butterflies throughout, symbols of her transformation from darkness to light. Hannah's story isn't just about misery, it's about love and freedom.
I was a caged butterfly who flew free from the trap of uninformed Islam, she writes. Her journey reminds us that freedom requires courage, and sometimes the most revolutionary act is speaking truth. In a world where honor can justify violence and silence enables abuse, Hannah's voice breaks through with a vital message. No tradition, faith, or family honor is worth sacrificing a child's safety and dignity.